Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Yeah, will do. I'll give you the nod.
Hello and welcome to this. It is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. I'm JB, fresh off a flight from Portugal, sat here with dear old Phil. Hello, Philip.
Hello, dear JB.
And down the line, there's Tim Cocker. Hello, Tim Cocker.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Ugh. Good evening, mate.
Oh, God, I'm absolutely exhausted, but delighted to be here with you two.
So, do you want to explain to us why we're a day late getting a podcast out and why Tim is forced to suffer the Egg Chasers TMO shipping container?
Well, frankly, the reason that it's late is because I got invited to a 90th birthday party.
90th birthday
party? A 90th birthday party. Now, this isn't any old 90th birthday party. It is a combination of a man's 60th birthday and his son's 30th birthday.
That kind of feels like it's cheating a little bit.
Oh, it's very much cheating. And to make it even more cheaty, the son, who's a good friend of mine from Broughton Park, when we used to play together, his birthday was in May. So it's not exactly timely. It was rather contrived, but it was also rather excellent.
Sounds good. And they flew you out to Portugal, or you flew out to Portugal to be with them?
We flew ourselves out to Portugal.
Yeah.
And then we had just 3 days of raucous messiness, and it was absolutely brilliant. So, it's a bit of a strange place. Have either of you ever been to the Algarve?
Yes.
No, I've never been to Portugal.
Really? Well, this is my first time there. And, well, what did you think, Phil?
When I was there, I stayed in a villa well away from...
Oh, did you go with the Gorans? Sorry, this is very, very, very in.
No. This is... Come on, we're going to talk about rugby.
Come on.
Rugby,
well,
rugby.
Well, I'll just say this. If you like golf, it's great. If you don't like golf, it takes you a little while to get used to. It's like going to a Stepford... Is it Stepford Wives? The whole...
I know what you mean.
Yeah, yeah, that sort of Pleasantville sort of thing. It's like an enclosure for humans. So yeah, that's.
Are you ready to pile into some rugby the way JP Doyle piles into rucks?
Yeah, what great officiating, hey?
That was.
It was really
brilliant,
good.
Absolutely brilliant. Got to the bottom of the problem, sorted out straight away with no need for any pesky TMOs ruining things.
Exactly right. Well, before we get into all those great things, find us on Twitter at Rugby Podcast. Is it Rugby Podcast? I always get that mixed up.
Yeah,
Rugby
Podcast.
I'm at Jay Beardmore, he's at Cocker, Phil just lurks. We're on Instagram, we're on YouTube, and we're on Facebook, so find us on all those various channels. Oh, and leave us reviews on Apple Podcasts too, because that's really important. Quite a weekend of rugby. It was quite breathless, actually.
So, JB, I assume you've not quite caught up on everything. Tim, you will have watched a lot, a good deal of it live as well.
Yeah, well... quite often on those weekends when I'm busy working, and I was at 3 games working this weekend, I actually see less rugby than I would do if I was sat on my sofa at home.
Yeah, because you're travelling from point A to point B to point C.
Quite.
Yeah, so which games did you work this weekend, Tim?
Bath, Exeter.
Bath, Exeter, Northampton, Leicester and Worcester, Bristol.
Wow. And I bet the best game by far of that lot, Worcester, Bristol.
I think the Friday night was great and Sunday afternoon was great. It was a great event and a great spectacle on Saturday, and lots of money raised for Rob Horn. That was brilliant. That was like that was the warm-hearted, great stuff that rugby does. I did feel like an East Midlands derby at Franklin's Gardens would have been spicier, and the weather obviously didn't help.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things. You know, it's interesting how quickly history moves on and you forget things. But a few weeks ago, I was interviewing Tom Wood about East Midlands derbies. There's been like 4 red cards. It's unbelievable. Mm. Incredibly spicy game.
Well, normally an incredibly spicy game. This one, a little bit less so. But there was some other brilliant games over the weekend. So, Tim, what was your pick of the weekend from the stuff that you did see?
Oh, from the stuff that I did see, it's Exeter. But I also on the stuff that I watched on the telly, and I loved Munster Leinster. Really, really enjoyed that. Leinster Munster. Really enjoyed that. And they didn't put out totally fully loaded sides, but they put out a lot of good players, and it's just ridiculous the depth. Ross Byrne, fly half for Leinster, was outstanding.
Yeah, it's quite incredible depth. They seem to have got rid of Joey Carberry without really skipping a beat.
Well, there's always someone pushing for places, isn't there? So there's whoever is looking like a world beater, there's always someone right behind them pressing them on.
Tim?
Yeah, we're looking like a world beater as well. James Lowe.
Yeah.
irritating. Well, not irritating. I don't begrudge him. I don't like that he's going to become an Irish international.
Potentially.
In the way I don't like that some England internationals are becoming England is Denny Solomona, for example.
But what?
But I don't begrudge the player.
He's a Pontefract lad. Now, James Lowe, there's more to this than meets the eye, isn't there? Because he came over, he's got something.
I think it's an arthritic type condition.
Yeah, so it's not quite as straightforward as it is like, I've given up on the All Blacks, I'm off to Ireland. It's more like, well, you need the money now.
Yeah, there is that reason.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also, he needs to be in a place where he can play maybe 1 in 3 games if he needs to.
Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah. And a big money move at his early... It's still early in his career, but every kind of season could be his last potentially. So
exactly. So
let's not begrudge James.
The reason I mention that is because some of the people on various Twitter conversations were saying, oh, the All Blacks, they must have great back three options if they can get rid of James Lowe. And I don't think it is actually quite the fact that they got rid of James Lowe or they actually have better options than James Lowe. It's just more the personal situation.
Situation is one thing. Personally, I don't think he would get into the All Blacks back three.
No, but it's not beyond the realms of possibility.
It's a few injuries. Several injuries.
I don't know. I think it's just right place, right time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fine, but it was impressive anyway. And sticking with Ireland for a second, Connacht's ground's getting redeveloped, which is a really nice point when you look at the fact that it was only a few years ago the IRFU were looking to can Connacht, and it was only a really spirited defence of their survival by a lot of people in the west of Ireland that means that they're there at all.
Indeed. Well, are they moving away from the ground or are they redeveloping it?
Redeveloping
it.
Right, so that ground is owned by the Dog Racing Club of Ireland or something ridiculous. So first and foremost...
The picture that I've seen of the new ground looks very AJ Belly.
Perfect! That's awesome news for them.
It does look a bit AJ Belly. Hopefully they'll be able to fill it a little bit better than Salford or Sale.
You mean Sale, which is sold out every match this season? At corporate?
Okay. I was going to say, there's been a few empty seats.
Well, yeah, the corporate's been sold out every game this season, so I don't know what you're talking about.
So it is owned by, I've just seen it somewhere, the Ireland Greyhound Board.
That's the one.
And they're going to develop a 12,000-seater stadium with new high-performance centre.
For dogs.
Adjacent to the back of it, so that's a strength and conditioning centre.
Hang on. I know I've just sort of made that joke anyway, we'll make it again. It is a high-performance centre for humans, right?
It is not specific. It does say...
Like so, tiny treadmills for dogs and weights and...
12,000 capacity stadium, new high performance centre and Greyhound racing track. So it's...
Nutrition
The high performance centre is sandwiched between... The 12,000-seater stadium, which is 12,000 seats for fans, and the Greyhound track. So, who knows?
I think having won the Pro 12 the other year, they could legitimately call it a high performance centre. Now, come on.
Oh yeah, yeah.
A human high performance.
Oh, centre. Yeah. Well, I mean, it just means that they can't re-sign Stuart Alden because they're only allowing really good boys. Sorry.
I just want to touch on something that we did at the very end of last week's Mammoth podcast.
Yes.
We were talking, I think the money with Joe Marler came up, and we were talking about probably £300,000 he's turned down for the next year. Mm-hmm. And that somehow worked into a hashtag would JB and to try and test what JB would do for £300,000.
And there's only so one thing I found out I wouldn't do for £300,000 of all those questions.
Would you, thank you for everyone that sent them in, would you have an MMA match with Steve Diamond after a Sale defeat?
Yeah, fine. Do that.
Would you be the Worcester Academy House tissue picker-upper?
300,000? Yeah, go on then, I'll do that.
Would you kick the penalty that relegated Sale, knowing the Premiership would be ring-fenced from that point on?
I'd do that.
Ooh.
Yep, no problem.
Would you use jazz hands at the next Sale game?
No problem.
Instead of clapping?
No, but I don't clap anyway. I'm a neutral.
Would you perform a haka with the New Zealand team?
Yeah, maybe. A bit more tricky now.
And then this one, a few variations of this one came in. Would you vote Labour?
Yeah, fine for 300,000. The one I wouldn't do, the one I found absolutely mortally offensive is, would I put the initials BB at the end of my Twitter handle? And I absolutely wouldn't do that. A man's got to stand for something.
So would you also give Stephen Jones a foot rub?
Yeah, go on then. For 300,000, yeah, fine. Do that.
All right, so I don't know how much you want to go into games. Like, there's a couple... One, the injuries seem to have featured heavily this weekend. So should we just run down who's in the physio room and just touch on those? Because Marlon Yard had an absolute... horror injury.
JB and I were just watching the game tape before we dialed in, Tim. It looks like he'll be out for some time. That's season ending from my initial assessment, having watched it twice.
I think you're probably right there, mate. I think you're probably right. And, you know, that was a bad one. Sam Kane's broke his neck.
Yeah.
That's obviously a bad one.
That sounds... I mean, obviously, that's not good. That sounds... absolutely horrific when you see the headline.
Yeah.
And then you read it's a fracture. There's no nerves aren't involved here at all.
Yeah, I know. But just to join up the dots a little bit, like it's just so you know, some high profile injuries on a weekend as well, where they're, you know, doing a game for a guy whose career has been ended by a very severe injury. It just sort of rings a little bit more true.
It does. Yeah. It does put the spectacle, Northampton versus Leicester at Twickenham, does put it all into perspective when you see injuries as bad as either the Yard or the Sam Kane one.
Yeah.
Any others you want to mention, Tim?
So Dan Robson has got a midterm injury, probably going to miss the rest of the calendar year or most of, certainly the autumn internationals, which is a shame for him.
Yeah, that is a blow, yeah.
Lavanini's got broken ribs after Pocock stamped on him some old school rucking.
Okay.
And Johnny May, his injury's not too bad.
Johnny May came off holding his arm.
Shoulder, yeah. But yeah.
He'll miss a couple of weeks. He'll miss the Champions Cup matches. He's looking like he should be fit for autumn internationals, but he came off the field not only injured but looking like a smurf.
Yeah, I did notice he had a bit of blue on his face.
That was a
one
shame.
Of our listeners to the pod and also Exeter Chiefs fan and an all-round good egg, Steve Parrott, his suggestion I think is the right one when he says that we shouldn't allow paint sponsors to paint their logo on the pitch. if sponsors want to have their commercial logo on a pitch, it should be arranged in flower beds.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, I quite like that.
They wouldn't have this situation of... It will happen in the Autumn Internationals. England shirts will be all kinds of colours 10 minutes into a game.
How odd would it be to grow coloured grass, by the way? I imagine that's a fairly straightforward thing to do. I mean, you can colour flowers, can't you, with the right sort of watering? And you can even actually make birds turn colour if you feed them the right stuff.
So, I don't know this. I'm certainly no expert. But surely it needs to be green for photosynthesis.
I was just thinking that.
A friend of mine once drank so much creme de menthe that his pee was green.
That's amazing. Genuinely amazing.
Creme de menthe is a pretty vivid green as well, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah.
There you go. They're the injury highlights.
Or lowlights.
Lowlights.
Well, I'll tell you what, just a brief little breakout discussion there. God, I sound like I'm at some team building event.
Let's have a breakout group.
Hold on a second, sorry. Yeah, it's all right. Sorry, I just had to check something. It sounds like some breakout thing. I sound like I'm talking at, what's it called, a team away day. But you mentioned Sam Kane. Let's talk about what is starting to be mentioned more and more and more as the next thing to clamp down on in terms of injuries and player welfare and safety.
The ruck. Yeah, it is. And you can tell because people like Ben Ryan are starting to talk about it now. And
Ben Ryan has been talking about this for a number of years, actually.
Yeah, so I guess they make some solid points. And, you know, the Kane injury was from that. There's been loads of high-profile cases from rucking. They've sort of tried to clear it out. I seem to remember Reese Webb getting a rather nasty injury pre-World Cup. Who was the other one that was fairly famously injured?
John de Villiers.
John de Villiers. So all the rotational and talky stuff is pretty much gone now. But rucking is an incredibly hard thing to do and stay on your feet continuously. That's the first thing that would say. The second thing I'd say is, you know, they sort of play fast and loose with the rules, and it's much more outcome-based than anything else. So one ruck which does no damage to an individual will not be officiated as if it's dangerous, and then a ruck which does do damage to an individual will be officiated as dangerous, even though they could be exactly the same technique, exactly the same ruck, but the outcome is different.
So that point that there is wild, massive inconsistency of the way that rucks are refereed, both from referee to referee, but also within an individual game. I think if you pinged every single potentially penalty offence in a game, it'd be a penalty every 5 minutes.
Yeah,
it would be way more frequent than that, because the number of people who are either on the defensive side not supporting their body weight and going for the ball, or not releasing the tackler going for the ball, and from the offensive side, just the number of people who fly in at all sorts of angles,
yeah,
off their feet, contact with head neck area. Now, all of that, I think the game as it is does work quite well.
Because yeah, I do.
Referees
as well
generally let things flow. However, there are some horrendous techniques.
Mostly used by the All Blacks, to be fair.
A lot used by the All Blacks, but a lot of other teams do it. There's a lot of horrendous techniques that don't get picked up ever. And then you see things like the Ryan Bower red card on Sunday for Worcester Warriors against Bristol, which that probably does happen 5 or 10 times a game, maybe, and this one got pinged and red carded.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the key ones for me when I think about how you deal with this moving forward, because I think I agree with you. Actually, it's largely all right. And bearing in mind how big these men are and how dynamic the movements are, is actually a very, very low incidence of any issues.
Well, I think the problem is, how do you keep jackling alive if you want to do that, right?
Yes.
And also keep everyone on their feet.
Yes, because what will happen is, as did happen when they first clamped down on this, the unintended consequence was people started the rolling technique.
Yeah.
So because obviously you need to find a way to get men off the ball, so that was the new technique, and then they've thought all the talky stuff, well, that could be really bad for spines and backs and stuff and necks, knee, so we better get rid of that.
Yeah.
Well, the Will Horrell Ryan Bauer one, I just want to touch on that one because actually I had sympathy with Ryan Bauer because he was clearing out a guy. Now, so many people went, he led with the shoulder. I don't know what other part of his body he's supposed to lead with going into a ruck. And also, they went, well, he hit Will Horrell on the head. Yes, he did. But just get yourself in the position where you are Ryan Bauer running at a ruck. All you can see is Will Horrell's shoulders facing you and head.
So,
and that's it. It's like going through a letterbox.
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying that I don't think it was a red card. I'm okay with it. My point being on that one is Wayne Barnes said a couple of times, right, leave it, get off, leave it. Didn't blow up, didn't say penalty advantage. And so Ryan Bauer went, oh, I've got to deal with this then. Smash. So I would actually say preventative refereeing is the way to stop stuff like this happening.
Yeah, it's a tricky one because if you just think of the physics, I mean, I was going to say science, but I don't use science. So it's not really a big issue. But if you're tackling and you're upright and then someone goes low, yeah, we get it. One guy's low, one guy's high, lack of, you know, head contact. Perfect, great. If you think about a ruck, everyone is low to the ground, the shoulders are facing forward. It's very, very difficult. So I guess the easy workaround is for referees to very quickly decide what the outcome of that ruck is, whether that be a penalty or the other team have won it, and then you can decide to, you know, fan out or not attack the ruck or do whatever else you want. The only problem with that is, I just wonder, you know, are you then leaving players open to, you know, multiple phases of defence after defence after defence, and how do you get the ball back? That's the other thing.
So the one thing I would like to change is, and it probably aligns with your point, Tim, about the refereeing, but it's probably more stringent refereeing of the jackler. So the defensive player who's jackling. So you often get jackling players either with their hands on the floor or their hands not on the ball, on the player.
Yeah.
So when you're trying to clear out someone who's holding the player, you're not trying to clear out 16 stone, you're trying to clear out 32 stone.
Yeah. Well, that's what I coach is, like, if you are clearing out a player, right, if you're protecting your own ball as the attacking rucker, you hold on to the guy on the floor for dear life. Yeah. Because you can't be moved.
So I think, and it's not going to be easy to do, but if you can stop it so it's the weight of two players, so it's just the weight of one player, then it is easier to blow that guy off the ball.
Yeah.
Blow past him. I think that'll be very difficult.
I'm sure this is going to be a talking point in weeks and months to come because, you know, if there's one thing I've noticed, it's that it's a creep. It is a, and I'm not trying to be a, just let the boys play. I'm not saying that because I do care about player welfare, but it's like, okay, we've sorted that one. Right. What else can we regulate?
It's like if we do
bring laws into sort.
It's like if we do an injury audit, there'll always be something which tops the injury audit. there always will be.
And if not, it'll be there'll always be something that's next highest.
Yep. Quite.
So I mean, that's the way it goes. So that is going to be coming down the line. So there'll be plenty more times to talk about this, I'm sure.
Right. Okay. I just want to move this on. Who thought Bristol Bears were going to win on the weekend? Because I certainly did.
I thought it was going to be close.
Well, it's sort of close.
I can't even remember what I predicted.
Was it 57? Was it 52-7?
52-7.
I think I might have predicted 52-7, yeah.
I think I went for that. Tell you, Worcester Warriors, right? I just don't really get this club. Because they do spend money. They've always, you know, like they bought in Hugard, or whatever his name is.
Hoo-ha.
You know, if the guy is available, they're willing to spend the money. It feels like they have to go on a winning streak of one game, and they fill out the stadium. The fans are super passionate. Like, why is it not better? And is this the start of something better?
Off the field, they've got new ownership now.
Dave Seymour?
Yeah.
I know.
He's a non-exec on the rugby side.
Yes, quite. So, but the guy... I think there's a lot of Warriors fans that are waiting to see how this pans out before they get too excited because of the, at this point, lack of information about where the money exactly is coming from, what the plans exactly are, and a bit more detail about the people that are involved. There are some questions that people who support Swindon Town Football Club would want answered and things like that, for example.
Oh, right. Is this guy from Swindon? Is he Swindon Town?
He's come from Swindon Town. He's a Swindon Town owner. Anyway, the point is, I don't think anyone's counting chickens till they've hatched. However, yes, the answer is yes. It could be the start of something turning around. And the one thing you can say is, as you say, they've got really, really good players. You talk about them spending money. Do you know what? Guess how many Benteo's been there for what? This is his third season?
Yeah, so what's that like? Nearly £1 million a game that paid him?
£49,000 a game per Premiership game.
What? He gets paid double for playing for Worcester than he does for England.
In the Premiership, that is.
That's amazing.
He's been paid, £500,000 a year. He has made 21 Worcester Premiership.
He's not even their best centre. Ryan Mills is. Venter's pretty handy.
He's not even their best inside centre.
No.
Well, briefly, that's the next one. You know how I said last week how it's annoying me? I don't mind people clamouring for someone to get into an England squad, but you have to say who you drop because you can't have 70 people in your squad.
Yeah.
The number of people that I mean, he had a great game.
I've been talking about Ryan Mills.
How has Eddie Jones not picked Ryan Mills? It's ridiculous. How's he not picked Ryan Mills in the England squad?
I've been talking about Ryan Mills for the best part of 18 months.
Yeah, but who would you drop out of the England squad to get him in?
Owen Farrell.
Now you're just trolling people.
I'm only joking, Twitter.
So this game, don't want to go into too much detail because we've already spoken about it quite a bit. I was watching this thinking, Worcester have targeted this probably since last season. They've targeted this fixture because they had an answer for everything that Bristol did. So you know how Bristol are going to play, and they tried to play it. They wanted to attack from everywhere, keep the ball alive, keep things moving forward. And Worcester's defence, so they read it without having a really aggressive push. They kind of let Bristol do what they do, sit off, and then when they have to take it forward, they put them down, and they targeted the rooks. So they didn't compete at every rook, but they targeted rooks when Bristol were a little bit stretched in attack and competed at those rooks and one ball or one penalties. And that creates a platform. But then just the really impressive bit for Worcester was just how clinical they were.
Mm.
They've got the backs. They've got the outside backs to do it. And inside backs when you count Weir and Hoohard.
Yeah, Weir's turning out to be a cracking signing.
We're living in a Duncan Weir universe now.
Yeah.
This is.
Well, Tim pointed this out at the start of the season. I thought you might be on something here. Worried about the strength of the pack. They've lost one guy to the NFL, one guy to Leicester Tigers. But I thought Darren Barry...
Two guys to Leicester Tigers. Yeah, Darren Barry is good. Darren Barry's been solid all season.
Just a good
carrier.
He was
born and raised in Bristol, so that would have been... And then Marco Mamma had a great game again.
Yeah, another...
Bristol. This was a massive game for individuals. It was a massive game for them as a team. They rested up and made sure everyone was fit and dropped, a load of guys weren't involved last week, and they did their homework. And yeah, like you say, Phil, they absolutely nailed it. And we'll leave Bristol really lacking. I mean, they need to be feeling confident to make their game plan work.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what I said about them last week. Like, what are they going to do once they get confident? Maybe they got overconfident.
Well, I think that game plan is good unless you're executing it flawlessly. And if you've got a defence that's reading it, it becomes more and more difficult to try and execute. And now defences know exactly what they've done, they are going to do. Because since day one, since the start of the season, they've not really, or I've not seen them, have a plan B.
Yeah.
It's just more plan A. And even when it's not working.
On exactly that, I said to Pat Lamb, before the game, you're a known quantity now, so do you need to maybe vary the way you're playing? And he said the variation is in the way we play. It's built into the way we play. And then after the game, I said, I can't remember exactly what it was, but basically, you know, Will, do you think you needed a plan B option for that, for when it wasn't going right, when the handling was, when the ball was being dropped, when the rucks weren't going, did you need a plan B? He said, no, it's very much like, nope. The plan B, the variations, they're all built into what we do.
Do you know what? I think he's right. Because it's like when people say, do New Zealand need a kicker? Like, no, we don't need a kicker. We'll just carry on doing what we do. And I think Bristol will be absolutely fine. And I think the way that they play will lend itself to the occasional beating. But there'll also be a lot of teams which they didn't expect to. Which then makes me think, who on earth is going to go down?
Oh, well. Shall we move to another game then? The other basement battle at the AJ Bell, where Sale came out 20-7 victors.
And I am genuinely stunned by this result.
I am.
What's happened to Newcastle?
Well, I tell you what has happened. In
two penalties to 17.
Two penalties to 17 and two yellow cards to nil. And the yellow, the Sale tries were all around those yellow cards in the second half.
Well, there is a lesson here, isn't there, for anyone who plays rugby, which is if you intimidate referees enough, you will eventually get decisions your way. So if there, you know, if there's ever been vindication, it'd be this one.
So you're crediting Steve Diamond's aggression towards referees?
No, I'm not. I'm going to cut that out as well. Because he's not.
It's clearly a joke.
Just a joke.
But Newcastle stunned. Newcastle were ill-disciplined. They made some bad decisions. I think the first yellow card was definitely a yellow card. It was so stupid from Mulipola. The second yellow card, if it hadn't have been right on the try line, I don't think it would have been a yellow card. I think he kind of hit the chest and slid up.
Mm.
But that meant you had... it was almost the minute that the Mulipola yellow card ended, you then had Mickey Young going off for 10 minutes, and that just killed them.
Yeah, I honestly thought these two teams both need a win. One of them made the playoffs last year. The other one didn't finish so strongly. It backs the wall time. I just thought Newcastle were going to do this. I'm amazed they didn't, actually.
Yeah, me too, to be honest. But they couldn't.
So who is going down then? Come on then. Who is going down? Who would you say?
Well, it's not Newcastle. It's not Sale. I said it wasn't Bristol. It's not Worcester.
if it's not one of those teams,
Northampton would be next, maybe.
Northampton, wow, possibly are. Honest answer.
I mean, it could go all the way up to Harlequins.
I think until Christmas, probably even after Christmas, until the Six Nations, after every single result, you're going to look at it like this Worcester versus Bristol hammering. You're going to look at it and say, "Oh, I think they're going down."
Yeah.
But then the next week, so next time Premiership comes back in a couple of weeks' time, I bet you I back Bristol to beat almost anyone, apart from maybe the top two.
Yeah, I think it's,
and get a result.
Five or six weeks' time, maybe, till it's back.
Is it not 32 days until the next Premiership game?
Oh, 39 days.
So it's 36 days in the next Premiership game. Right, well, I've got a question for you.
Yeah, it's 16th of November, there you go.
Oh, so long to wait.
And Bristol host Exeter, so maybe I take that back.
Good luck, boys. here's a question for you then. Imagine a different universe, right, where Exeter Chiefs and Saracens no longer exist. Who are the top four teams in England at the moment?
So you want us to take the 12 teams in the league, delete two. No replacements.
Because, quite frankly, it's just not fair if you include them.
Well, they're both 6-6. Exeter, fairly routine win in the end. Saracens came from behind against a very spirited Quinn side.
Mm.
But yeah, okay. So, number one team in this alternative universe, I think, are Wasps.
You know, they've been sort of lucky in some respects, beating Worcester the way that they did. I thought, yeah, they beat Sale pretty hands down. There's another one Newcastle.
Newcastle away, where they snuck it at the end.
So their season could look very different.
It could too.
I think Gloucester and Bath, I think, have been quite good so far.
But Bath fell apart against Exeter.
Yeah, and they didn't really have much of an excuse to. Well, yes, at least they were competitive. I mean, they weren't competitive against Saracens. But they were competitive against Exeter right until the end when they just blew it.
Last 20 minutes or so, they fell apart.
But I think a full-strength Bath squad would be in the mix for top two.
I think I'm going to give a very similar cop-out answer to the relegation one, which is after every game, you're going to say... So, like, Gloucester's performance against Wasps was brilliant.
Mega.
Superb. Led by Cipriani, who is truly exceptional.
The little... But
last couple of weeks, Gloucester have had awful results. They've been hammered a couple of times. So
it's all down to that pack. They got the pack bullied Wasps at the weekend, and then Cipriani was able to do what he does. The weeks prior to that, Gloucester got bullied a bit in the pack, and Cipriani couldn't do what he does. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Let's give him some more praise. That little deft grubbery type thing that he did. I mean, that was like just a guy playing a different sport to other people.
Seeing different things.
Yeah, just so casual about it.
He's just fed up of running.
Yeah.
I'm pretty certain he could have run in there.
He's so...
Just got a bit tired.
He's so bored with all his average rugby and all average people around him. Nonchalantly kicks it away. Oh, and then scores a try.
Who would your top four be, Jay?
I think Leicester Tigers are going to come good. I think Bath are going to come good. Wasps and Gloucester, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got those four.
I'm happy with that. The table doesn't quite reflect that right now, but I don't think it'll be far off that. So it'll be those four competing for the last two.
I think Leicester Tigers
top four spaces.
I think their change of coach has helped. I think, although I've slammed their recruitment before, I think actually David Denton and
Spencer.
Oh, we've not seen him yet, have we?
Well, we've seen him get red carded.
Yeah. And the other one as well. Who's the other one? He's playing at 7 and 8 from Wasps. Thompson. Guy Thompson. I think they're quite smart pickups. They made a difference. Yeah,
agreed.
We're all agreed on those. I just want to... actually, before we get on to the next game, we should just have a quick shout to the game of the weekend between Old Streetonians and London Welsh.
Oh, yes.
Amazing.
What a game.
0-0. Have either of you ever played in a 0-0?
Played in a 3-0.
Ooh.
I have played in a 0-0 before.
Have you? Wow.
It was like under 15s, Newbury Club. And I can't remember whether it was...
It was Ben Ryan coaching.
Chinner or Chippenham in biblically bad weather. And the old Newbury Rugby Club, before the lovely one they've got these days, used to be the pitch we used to play on a slope.
Oh, amazing. And,
It was a horrendous day, but yeah, that was 0-0.
Oh, 3-0 is bad enough.
I remember playing in it was a 6-5, I think, at Matlock. This was like under 15s or under 16s in like a national cup.
I've definitely had a 6-5 before.
And it was over Christmas and driving to Matlock from Manchester over the tops through Derbyshire. And there was this like horse and cart with a Santa Claus on it. It felt like hours we were held up behind this thing, and we got there, it's freezing, driving rain. One of the worst games I've ever played in.
Well, I played a second team game for Broughton Park last year in the against Sambach, and like it was, I can't believe we played it actually, you know, in today's day and age. It was like sideways sleet, it was covered, the ground was covered in snow, and our whole strategy was not to let Sambach know that we were cold, not to react to the cold, just act like you're not bothered, and we lost.
Good strategy.
Yeah. Well, I got it from Tom Brady. I think he went out to warm up for his first Super Bowl without... Was it Super Bowl? Well, he used to warm
first,
up...
First like, Leicester Tigers training session.
Yeah, sorry, that's Tom Brady. No, the other one. I'm sure he used to warm up without any thermals on, just to show how hard he was, and it didn't bother him.
And he kept pulling hamstrings.
Yeah, exactly. we need to talk about Saracens Harlequins as well, because that was quite a tussle.
That was a great game. Great game as in, it was so niggly. There was so much like... bite and abrasiveness from both sides.
How do you think that game would have gone across with the American audience?
Good question.
Oh, yeah.
So this was a record-breaking game in that it was the first free-to-air game shown in the USA. So it was a later game UK time for the USA audience. It was free to air on NBC. I think I'm right in saying.
And Saturdays in America are all about college football, isn't it? That's like a religion there.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was competing with that. So I'd be interested to see how it got on.
So there were some very big hits. There was not too many exciting tries. The Joe Marchand try was confusing rather than exciting. The kick held up in the wind.
Right, so I've got some interesting stats for you. Are you ready for this?
Okay.
Okay. How many tackles did Chris Robshaw make?
I think it was initially 28. I think it's actually been upped it to 30.
Oh, wow. Well, I've got 28 here. But do you know why that's impressive for me? Because do you know how many carries Billy Vunipola had?
28.
28 on the nose.
Billy Vunipola made 3 tackles.
Yeah, and by the way, Chris Robshaw, 4 carries. So if Ops are going to upgrade Billy's tackles, then they basically played against each other.
Well, they're only allowed to tackle each other.
Yeah, but I tell you what the most amazing thing is about Billy V's performance. 28 carries, only 70 metres. So he's had a tough... I mean, I love that. I love that stat for so many reasons.
And he got 20 of them on his try.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's got his try. He picked the ball up about on the 22.
So he's just gone out there and got hammered all day and not taken a backward step for 28 carries, which is incredible.
And on the 69th minute, he finally finds a bit of room and scorches him from the 22.
Oh, so good. So, and I also just love the fact that Chris Robshaw went out and made 28 tackles. I mean, maybe 30 if what Tim's saying is true. I just love those levels of commitment. That to me is more exciting than anything.
And those two, they did epitomise both teams' performances, because Harlequins, we have joked numerous times at their expense about their defensive frailties and their weak mental edge when it comes to defence. And there was none of that here. I mean, Saracens only scored that one try at the end.
Where is this Harlequins?
This is my issue with this, and I'll link this to another game. Harlequins always raise their game against Saracens.
Yes, that's true.
That should be, if they can do it against Saracens, they can do it every week. And I'd also say, linking the two, and you talked about the mentality, I just wonder if there's actually a chink in the armour there in the fact that they need to play their big rivals that they put so much emphasis and focus on to draw out that level of performance. And Bath's another one. I was shocked coming away from the rec at how much Bath accepted losing.
Yeah.
There was a mentality of like, well, we did some good things. It was all right. It's like, no, you played an underperforming Exeter team at home.
Do you think there's an element with Bath, though, that
you lost convincingly,
that they feel sorry for themselves when they get a few injuries?
I don't think anyone's... Well, no,
I think
no,
they I do, think you know, as a team, like, there's a Saracens mentality a few years ago, wasn't there? I mean, it's kind of drifted a little bit now, but it's always like next man up. Hey, you know, if that guy goes down, we'll plug in this guy and we'll just carry on regardless. I tell you, used to do that brilliantly, was Leicester Tigers. Leicester Tigers used to win over... I'm talking 10 years ago now, or maybe.
Yeah, it's a long time ago.
But that's what they used to do. It was like, right, okay, well, he's gone down, we'll get him. And they'd even win over the international. And I just think that Bath feel sorry for themselves.
Yeah, you contrast. Todd Blackadder's thought, a lovely, lovely, lovely man, very open, very honest. But he was kind of making the noises. I wanted to see him be really angry and cheesed off that they didn't win that game. That was an opportunity missed, and we're really annoyed at how that panned out. And on the side, Rob Baxter comes out of the game going, we need to step up. We've got to get better by next week, or we're going to come a cropper in Europe. And the fact that those are the noises, I thought it was really telling. And I think the same when I look at Quins, why aren't they demanding more of themselves more often?
Yeah, I think you know when it's a good team, because the guys who are not playing, when they do get a chance, do really, really well. I think that was a problem with Leicester last year. I think it's a problem with Bath this year. You know, you've got to have that strength throughout the squad, and you've got to have people pushing other people. I think too many times now I'm hearing Bath fans and people around Bath just saying, well, you know, we've got this guy injured and that guy injured. And obviously, they're big players, Jonathan Joseph, Anthony Watson. You know, they're not inconsiderable players, but you've got to move on.
Yeah, Exeter and Saracens would deal with guys like that missing.
Yep.
Much, much better.
Agreed.
But, Mark, on to the positives for Quinns. That incredible assist from Marcus Smith. Oh, you know, just getting the pitching wedge out and aiming for just the right of the post as he did.
If they can score if they can score maybe three or four tries like that every single week, they'll win some games.
God, I'm looking at the missed tackles for Harlequins, and like, I don't think
did they miss any?
Well, there's a couple of guys that got two missed tackles, and that was the absolute limit. That is astounding. Yeah, same. And to be fair, same for Saracens too.
It did reflect the conditions to an extent, because Saracens didn't play the free running, offloading, distributing rugby that they did a week earlier, where Alex Goode was running absolutely everything and taking people on and throwing offloads round the back and all the rest of it. They kept it tighter because the conditions dictated.
Hmm. Yeah.
I don't like looking at stats. They're an indicator, but I don't like drawing conclusions from them, because as Phil said, you know, oh, there wasn't many missed tackles. That means they've done a really good defensive job.
Disagree.
It had been raining all day long. They kicked it constantly. There was very little clean breaks, but that was more to do with the conditions than a particularly strong defensive effort.
I definitely agree in this instance.
Some other results, because that's pretty much the Premiership wrapped up. Do we all agree? Oh, sorry, Gloucester. We've mentioned that they beat Wasps.
Hammered Wasps.
Very, very good win.
Cipriani.
I think we've told this story before in past weeks.
One thing I want to mention in relation to the bat.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This game was, and in terms of the laws, ooh, do we need to let the boys play a little bit more when it comes to deliberate knock-ons? I don't want to see yellow cards for these quote-unquote deliberate knock-ons.
I absolutely and fundamentally disagree with you here. So I want the knock-on eliminated, right? Gone.
Oh, yes.
Okay? But if it's a deliberate knock-on and it's a try-scoring opportunity, that to me is a clear yellow card. I think, so yellow cards are almost automatic, I think, when the team has got the ball and someone commits a penalty infringement within 5 metres of their own line. Just straight away.
Just back up a little bit, because I agree with you. Deliberate knock-ons should be dealt with. They're cynical. They're cheating. And yes, I'm okay with the yellow card for that. But Rocker Duguni,
yeah.
Like, basically, my issue with the way it's officiated at the minute is yellow cards are being given out for instinct, millisecond instinct, skills, and motor memory that's been drilled into these players since they picked up a rugby ball. Mm. You see the ball, oh, I can get it. You reach for it. You might not actually yeah, catch it. But to actually yellow card and penalise that, I just think is absolutely fundamentally wrong.
There is
deliberate knock-ons where you like slap it down.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
there is like one of those weird things, like one of the conditions of giving the yellow corners. Was it a realistic chance to catch it? Now, I would argue, right, of all the people in the world who are going to be good at judging, is it a realistic chance to catch it, or the professional rugby players? Like, if they decide to go for it, it is actually what they do for a living. You know, it is then therefore realistic.
They weren't far away from catching it, were they?
Yeah. He's got his fingers to the ball and he's a professional athlete. There's a good chance he could catch it.
Well, that's... Tim, I think your point is spot on. It is not officiated, or in general, it is not officiated whether it was deliberate or not. It is officiated whether they had any reasonable chance of catching that ball. And the Rocco, I don't think he deliberately intended to hit it, to knock it on. I think he went for it, knowing that he had a chance of getting the ball, albeit quite a slim chance, and, given that position.
And the other great one as well is, if it's a yellow card, did he slap it down or did he slap it up?
Because there's, in, I think it was Australia or England last year, Kirtley Beale slapped down.
Yes.
Slapped the ball down, but then signalled to the referee that he was trying to slap it up.
I mean, like, if you can slap it down, why can't you slap it up with equally as little intention to catch it? It's bizarre.
I want to get like a neuroscientist in as a pundit just to explain, because basically what Rocco Degouni did that without any conscious thought. It was all unconscious instinct, because it happened in milliseconds,
a fraction of a second. And
so to then officiate and yellow card, instinct and muscle memory, and just it's like if I, you know, if someone went for you with a fist, you'd flinch. You haven't thought
not me, mate.
Deliberate flinching, JB.
I don't know what the laws say. I haven't read the laws. Okay, but
well, just the name, deliberate knock on.
Yeah,
It's one of the few areas of rugby where you need to judge intent.
Yeah,
officially
knock on.
I think if that's how you're going to officiate it, the law should be changed. It shouldn't be called deliberate knock on. It should be called knock on with no reasonable opportunity to
knock on severe
to catch the ball.
Yeah.
Oh, unlikely catch - knock on.
Yeah,
and that doesn't seem like the sort of offence that should be worthy of a yellow card.
Well,
but anyway,
unlikely catch could go against you as well, because of course, if it was your own teammate making that pass, the unlikely catch knock on could also come into play.
True.
Yeah, don't want that.
A faff the clerk missed three into touch.
Oh dear God! Oh, by the way, back in Manchester.
Yellow card. Denny, you're yellow carded. You didn't get anywhere near that.
Gone. Faf is back. You'll be delighted to know.
Delighted.
Well, as are most of the English rugby watching population, right?
Shall we touch on the South Africa New Zealand game?
Didn't really see it.
Yeah.
So you tell me about it.
So it was a 32-30 win for New Zealand. That tells virtually none of the story. So South Africa had a 17-point lead with 20 minutes to go and managed to blow it from that position. Now, South Africa did a lot of things right. The two centres, Creel and Dialandi, both exceptional going forward. They got yards, they controlled the game, their set piece was good, their pack looked good, a lot of their defence looked good. Faf was generally exceptional, disrupting Aaron Smith.
Mm.
He blew an unbelievable try-scoring opportunity by passing a two-man miss-pass when there was only one man on down the blind side and hit the cameraman. And it was there was one of his players on the blind side and about four New Zealand defenders. He went blind. He missed the first man and hit the cameraman. Incredible.
There are pros and cons to being a great genius.
But South Africa just crumbled, and New Zealand at the end. So Colby scored 59 minutes to make it a 17-point lead with 20 minutes on the clock. And immediately, Rico Ioane got that try, hit back, and then it was it felt... It would have felt inevitable had we not seen New Zealand lose in similar circumstances the other week. But this time they didn't lose.
Incredible.
They got it right.
It does make next year's World Cup, that group look a lot more competitive than people originally thought it was.
The South Africa group.
Yeah.
Yeah. South Africa.
Because these two won't meet again, will they, till the World Cup? Or will they play the Championship and then the World Cup?
I think they normally play a curtailed Championship. So
what a waste of time. Save for the World Cup now, boys. I tell you the South African players that I'm loving at the moment, probably since the England tour, is Deante, the other winger who wasn't playing, and Colby, who I just think those boys can really play.
Cheslin Colby.
That's the boy.
Yeah, he is good.
And they've got Vermeulen off. He's in Japan just getting revved up and ready and as well. So
eating a lot of sushi.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He's on it.
Speaking of Japan, actually, just one thing that I noticed from the week. Oh, you're absolutely right. Your assessment was spot on, Phil. I've got very little to add other than Richie Mwanga gave more people reasons to clamour for him to be starting.
Yeah,
in a 15 that accommodates Beauden Barrett somewhere else.
Yeah,
he did look. He had a great game. But just the options they've got.
What about McKenzie? I thought he was the best fly half in the world. That was only 3 weeks ago.
No, Mwanga. It's all about Mwanga.
Yeah.
Oh, can it's I just, all about Richie Mwanga now.
Can I? Just,
no, I just go on.
I just want to float something, right? So this morning or yesterday morning, our Egg Chasers England squad came out.
Yes.
Right. We probably don't remember this because we only did it a day ago.
Yeah.
Right. But it did.
Oh, yeah. We did that yesterday. Yeah.
Just yesterday. God, it seems like so long ago.
Doesn't it just?
So much has happened.
So one of the things that I said, and no one else agreed with me, was I'd probably not take Farrell as a 10 or maybe even at all, and I'd take Danny Cipriani.
Oh, are we going down this again?
No.
What are you doing? Where are you going?
I wanted to ask you this question, right? Do you think that Owen Farrell is a better all-round rugby player than Beauden Barrett?
Interesting. So, certain facets of his game, definitely yes.
Yeah.
Certain facets of his game, no. So, for example, two extremes are he's nowhere near as fast as Beauden Barrett, but he can kick a hell of a lot better.
Yes.
They're extremes and everything else kind of falls.
I mean,
he's probably
a bit stronger. He probably can hit harder.
Yeah.
Is he as good at defense? Anyway.
So Barrett does get hidden a bit in defense.
Well, the reason I ask this is because I've been mulling over Owen Farrell for quite some time now, thinking, was I right? Was I wrong? And I now come to the conclusion that he is probably a better all-round rugby player than Beauden Barrett. If you were just to concoct some tests for what rugby players do, without playing a game.
If you're going to do a FIFA, like one of those diagram things.
Yeah, exactly.
But
does it really matter how good of a rugby player you are if you're not as good a 10? And is Beauden Barrett actually that really good 10? Or is he something else?
Yeah, he's a very, very, very good 10. Owen Farrell is a very, 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 very good 10.
He's a very good non-kicking 10, is Beauden Barrett. Owen Farrell is a very good kicking 10, but his good bits are not, or some of his good bits are not quite as good as
Jesus.
I would say here's the question again. I don't. We shouldn't take too long on this because we talked about Owen Farrell loads on the last podcast only yesterday. Who would you, if you had to switch, if you had to have, hold on a minute, if you had the choice of both of them in both squads, who would you start 10?
Beauden Barrett,
because I actually think you'd start Beauden Barrett for New Zealand, and possibly there's an argument you'd start Owen Farrell for England.
That's an interesting point, yeah, because of the way they play.
I can't imagine Beauden Barrett getting any love if he was English over here. He'd basically be like Danny Cipriani. I mean, that isn't a joke either. I mean, Danny Cipriani is fast; he can pass a lot. Kicking is
good.
Probably
no, let's not go down the Cipriani. Yeah. Come on. loads of other stuff we could talk about.
I do have another point, right?
We are struggling for time now as well. Tim, you are on the clock. The TMO shipping container runs out of juice in 9 minutes.
Yes, it does. Well, just last thing on this, right? If I wore a New Zealand shirt between 9, not including 10, then to 15, right? I would have thought that one of those blokes, one of them could kick. Or if not, and I was just on the fringes, say if I was, I'm just trying to think now, Anton Leonard Brown.
Yeah.
I would do nothing but practice kicking.
Kick.
That's all I would do.
I imagine a fair few of them can and do kick.
Well, why don't they then? It can't be any worse.
800% last week.
Wow. Yeah. Ben Smith. Surely he can kick.
Ben Smith can do everything.
There you go.
Including your tax return.
Is that right?
Absolutely.
Amazing.
Right.
Here's one thing I noticed. You can have too much of a good thing, and Eddie Butler's montage voiceover stints in rugby. He's been doing them on NFL for the BBC for a while now.
Yeah, because that South Walian sort of accent really goes down well, doesn't it, when you're commentating on, you know, Texans versus Raiders or something.
Yeah.
Real nostalgia.
He's been doing it on World's Strongest Man.
Okay. More.
And then now, you mentioned Japan, he was on the Japanese Grand Prix for Channel 4 doing an Eddie Butler-esque montage voiceover.
Yeah, well, you know, it works for rugby and Estevod highlights, and that's about it.
Yeah, too much of a good thing there.
Yeah.
The other rugby championship game, did either of you see this? 11:40 UK time kickoff.
No, sadly not. I was very drunk by this time.
So
I couldn't get a stream which worked in my hotel room in Worcester.
Oh really?
What did you use the Academy House Wi-Fi or
the Academy House has got exceptional Wi-Fi, Tim.
Damn it, I didn't think of that.
No, weird. That's the one thing I think about when I go to Worcester.
It's all I think about in
the Academy House Wi-Fi.
This was a truly remarkable game, the ultimate game of two halves, where Argentina were 30 points to 7 up at half-time, 23 points up at half-time, and managed to completely blow it and concede 5 unanswered tries in the second half.
Oh, no.
Wow.
I know.
Wow. Now, there were...
And also, Argentina have got incredible jinking, stepping, just balanced runners.
Yeah.
And they've got no scrum. What has happened?
Yeah, what has happened? Bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah. It was a little bit bizarre. It was an exceptional performance by Argentina in the first half. Sanchez and Matera looking brilliant. Buffelli also looking very good. Sanchez went off and Lavanini went off and Argentina switched off. And a rousing speech from Michael Checker by the looks of the in-changing room video meant Australia came out all guns blazing and just completely blew them away. So very disappointing for Argentina to throw that because they were looking phenomenal. And it could have been Checker out. Had they lost that, had that first half performance continued and yeah. Argentina... If they'd have kept it up, they would have put 60 points past Australia. That could have been game over for Checker.
Oh, well, Checker lives on.
He does.
Shall we just do the games involving British teams in the European Cup for next week? The Champions Cup.
I've put 50p in the generator of the TMO shipping container. I've probably got... About 13 minutes.
13 minutes, brilliant. Yeah. All right, let me bring up the...
Let's go through Champions Cup. We'll do every game, but we can skip through anything that we...
Oh, crikey.
Don't particularly like.
Well, Friday is an absolute rocket of a game. Leinster Wasps.
I think this is going to be one-sided.
Wasps win?
No. We've seen this before.
No, hold on. Before we go any further, there's one game that Phil has managed to not talk about. Come on.
Oh, Tim.
Ulster's first defeat at Ravenhill to Connacht in 58 years.
Yeah. Oh. Well spotted, Timothy.
Yes. A very good Connacht performance. An amazing Bundiaki try. An amazing Nick Timoney try, actually, in the 80th minute to get a losing bonus point. But it doesn't look good for Ulster.
But it weren't beaten until last week.
Yeah, and...
But not a good unbeaten, was it?
No. What a way to turn unbeaten into very much beaten.
What a way to turn the corner.
Yeah. From top of the table to fifth now in Conference B.
God, there's some fascinating...
Third from bottom in Conference B.
There are some fascinating games.
I've got
games.
A slight theory. I've got a little theory that the more effort teams have put into their try-scoring GIFs on Twitter, the worse they're performing.
Oh, nice.
Northampton.
Northampton Saints.
Yeah.
Have put loads of effort, but Ulster have put a lot of effort into theirs. Jacob Stockdale... treating a rugby ball like a can of beer and knocking it back.
Lad.
it was the chap doing the rave.
There's one guy who does the rave for Northampton using trowels. Have you seen that?
I have seen that.
Right.
But on that social media one, Bristol Bears, they're a breath of fresh air on social media just for having a bit of fun.
They are. They're very funny, aren't they?
I particularly enjoyed the Bath Gummy Bear tweet first game of the season.
Mm.
Yes, and their Banksy one today was good.
Oh, yes, I've just seen that, actually. It's very, very funny.
I've not seen that.
Have you seen the Banksy video?
I've seen the Banksy video.
Excellent stuff. That really is excellent stuff. Right, OK. Leinster Wasps. Leinster, yeah?
I'll be there for this. I'm well excited.
Oh, God damn it. What... Oh, what an excellent job.
Yeah.
Come on over.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? Do you want to get paid to go to this? Yeah, please. Give me your money. All right, so we think Leinster, don't we?
Leinster comfortably.
All right. This, to me, is the best game of the weekend if it was 15 years ago. Bath versus Toulouse. Two of...
powerhouses of Europe.
Yes.
I mean, two dynasties.
Exactly.
I still think this is a real glamour tie. It's got that history and romance. It's the one that's on Channel 4. So BT Sport are covering every single Champions League game.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one game every round on Channel 4 as well, which is, I think, fantastic for rugby, that there's terrestrial rugby for the European Cup. And how good does it feel calling it the Heineken Cup again? It just feels right.
It does, doesn't it?
Heineken Champions Cup.
So I basically think this... Dan Lyle is going to exchange tries with Fabian Palouse, but I think Entomac's going to have too much in the end, and it'll be Toulouse.
I think. Well, I don't forget what's his face. Oh God, I've just brain farted the fly half. It was the South African fly half, high tackling, swinging arming.
Brock James.
Butch
James.
No, Brock. Butch James.
Butch James. We have to go.
Butch James will mix it up a bit with their back row.
I think we need to go further back. We've got to be talking about the Glanvilles and Cats, and Tyndalls. Maybe even further back than Tyndall.
Further back than Tyndall.
Angus Gardner.
Bolshaw.
Yeah. That's how far back we've got.
No. Matt Perry.
Yes. I remember the season when Matt Perry had to play fly half because they were so short. Good old days.
Nigel Redman and Martin Haag in the second row.
Well, what are they going to do here, Bath? I mean, their first team pack is frightening. And I don't know anything about Toulouse, so I don't know. Give it Toulouse. We'll find out, and then we'll apologise for it on Sunday. Exeter Munster.
Give me Bath, by the way.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I'm going to go Bath.
Home advantage. These French teams don't travel well.
Good.
Great cliche.
Yeah.
I mean, great...
great analysis.
Analysis, yes.
Yes, quite. Exeter-Munster.
Exeter-Munster. Now, this is a game.
This is a tasty game.
Exeter, with something to spare.
I think Exeter as well.
I love... They've been talking about this openly for weeks.
Yeah.
Just... It's great. I love it. And they are talking up how much Europe means to them. So they're putting themselves under pressure and really, really excited to see how they get on. I think it's going to be a tasty, tasty game. I think Exeter will edge it. But that's probably the game I'm looking forward to seeing the most out of the whole weekend, actually.
Yeah, it's going to be electric, I think.
Which is interesting, because I expect this will be quite a low-scoring affair.
Do you think?
Because they're two well-suited teams, as in relatively few star names, but definitely more than the sum of their parts, superbly well-drilled packs. And I think they'll... And two very good, very well-drilled defences. So I think they will nullify each other to an extent. I think it'll be low scoring, but I think Exeter will grind it out.
Mm-hmm. Montpellier, Edinburgh.
Montpellier.
Yeah,
at home.
Montpellier.
That's south. I looked at the Montpellier team. I think just this weekend, actually. Mostly South Africa. Enormous, enormous team. Mostly South Africa.
Did you read Jim Hamilton's article in the Times this week?
No.
Really interesting. When he went to Montpellier, he was saying that... I think he played Montpellier. Or was it Cast? I'm going to say Montpellier. But pretend it is whichever, right?
Unnamed French club.
Unnamed French club, but I think it's Montpellier. He was saying that they just didn't accept him because they just do things different over there. So he tried to lead the way in the gym. He started a rowing program. Came in the next day, someone cut the wires on the rower so he couldn't do his rowing program. That's just the way it is in France.
Who needs physical fitness? Rugby is an art.
Exactly.
Unless you're South African.
Who's got a better South African team, South Africa or Montpellier?
It's probably not far off, to be honest.
It's not, is it? Ulster versus Leicester.
Ugh.
At Ravenhill. Two teams, no defences. Who's going to win?
Two teams that have won the competition, but will be right down the list of the bookies' odds to win a competition this year. They might even be out of the how many teams is it? 20 teams.
Yeah.
If they might even be in the bottom four or five with the bookies.
It wouldn't surprise me. I would put the way Ulster are playing now. They've got a huge number of injuries, but the way they're playing. Give me Leicester. And Leicester are not playing particularly well.
If you say it, I'll go with that.
I think Leicester, and I just would want to talk up. I thought Eastman and Tuolangi were great the weekend in difficult conditions. Defensively, they were brilliant.
Eastman's the boy. If he stays fit, he's the absolute boy.
Now, will Tamua be back? Is he injured?
Doesn't matter. Fit? Release him now. They've got Eastman.
I think Leicester win as well.
Yeah, give me Leicester.
Scarlets Racing. At Scarlets.
Ooh, Racing are looking ominous.
Tasty.
Yeah, Racing are looking ominous. Although, didn't they lose to Lyon the other day?
If it's away from home, they lost. If it's at home, they won.
It was at home. I think they might have lost.
Standard top 14 procedure.
Mm.
Win your home games. Forget everything else.
In fact, I'm pretty sure they did lose. Let me just double check that. Lyon beat Racing at Racing 19-13.
Are Scarlets getting any of their players back yet? Because they were another one who were really suffering injuries at the start of the season.
Davis is back.
Davis?
Lions Davis.
JD.
Yeah.
How many... It's not narrowing it down in a Welsh.
No, it's really
Davis,
not.
Got Davis, they've got Williams.
Davis,
I think Williams is okay.
Evans.
Evans looks okay.
Steph Evans played in the bloody A team this week. Second week running, Steph Evans has played in the Scarlets A team.
Is that a disciplinary...
God knows. But,
issue.
It'd be nice if he got good. Like, now would be good. Gloucester Cast. Right, this is a big score, and I think Gloucester win this big. I remember watching Cast last year against a Leicester team that was actually turned out to be rubbish. And they got absolutely hammered. I expect it to happen again.
So bear in mind...
They're top of the top 14, aren't they?
Yes, and they're also top 14 champions.
So they're not top. They're in fifth place at the moment. But they are champions. In one of the best games I've seen in a long time, they beat Montpellier the final last season. So they can really turn it on when they want to. I just don't imagine that this will be one of the games that they want to turn it on.
Mm.
So give me Gloucester.
Lyon Cardiff. Now, I am told on good authority, Lyon are going to hammer Cardiff at Lyon.
There you go.
And so take that to the bank.
I wouldn't want to discredit someone. So Lyon beat Racing 92.
I just said that.
In Paris.
I just said that as well.
In Paris.
Yeah.
Astonishing.
The big silverback Carl Ferns is back. That's all they need. That's all they need.
Well, this is why Cardiff are in trouble. Because Mr. Ferns did not play in Paris because of a plastic pitch.
Ah.
But he's raring to go against Cardiff. So Cardiff...
Which is so... It's so frustrating for him because he's in a pool with three teams with plastic pitches.
I know. It's outrageous, isn't it? But there
we
go.
What are the chances? Are they the only three plastic pitches in the Champions Cup?
No,
Racing, obviously.
Newcastle. Glasgow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, Newcastle have got an alternative Champions Cup.
Yeah, which is our next game. It could get very grisly, this. The men from the northeast travel to... the home of the French Navy.
Toulon.
Yeah.
Toulon, who are currently third from bottom in the top 14.
But do you know what? I know they're doing poorly in top 14. Europe, there's a situation a few years ago. I'm not sure if it was the year that Northampton went down, actually, but they actually ended up doing really well in Europe because the pressure was off. Okay, Tim.
Oh, sorry. No, it's fine. I'm just readying myself to run.
Okay. So let's wrap up these final couple of games then.
So Toulon and then Glasgow Saracens, which I think is going to be a mega match.
Glasgow.
Adam Hastings, by the way, he's the prince that was promised for Scottish rugby.
Well, it's like I always say, it's all about opportunity. And he's got opportunity at Glasgow with a great setup and a great team.
Yeah, he's getting some rave reviews out of Glasgow.
Yeah. So, give me Saracens.
Yeah, Saracens.
After all that.
Saracens.
Oh, yep. And Sales beat Perpignan away on Friday night. And that's all
there is. To beat Paddy Jackson? No chance.
So. And that's really all there is to say about the Challenge Cup. So,
there you go.
In-depth analysis from your favourite rugby podcast. We will be back next week with all the results from European rugby and much, much more. Until then, go find us on Twitter at the aforementioned Twitter sites, whatever they are, accounts.
At Rugby Podcast.
That's the one. Facebook, Instagram, all those sort of things. But until next week, when we will be back, I bid you farewell. Goodbye.
JB, one final thing. Did you like your cameo on the Beer 52 ad?
I have not heard it.
Oh, maybe you should go and listen.
My cameo?
Yeah.
Well, I like anything which is all about me. So yeah, I'll check that out immediately. Excellent.
So yeah, obviously get your Beer 52 offer from us. Cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. Go and get your Cornerstone razors and in a bit.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.